Thank you. So we are thinking about some of our core values as a church, as Kairos, and we have talked about being generous and being responsive to what God's saying to us. And we've talked about developing a shared life where we have friendships with each other that can act like a web that hold us together, that support us and allow us to care for each other. And today, we're going to think about the next of our values, which is purpose. And if nothing else, I would love to convince you that because of God and God's love, your life has purpose. You are important. There's meaning in your existence, and you can make a difference wherever you happen to be, at whatever season of life you're in. John, can you pop my slides up, please? Now, we'll get to Genesis in a minute, but first I want to read to you from a book I have been enjoying that I got for my birthday. It is an epic poem written by Malcolm Guite, who's a poet and a priest, all about the Arthurian legends. So if you like epic Arthur poems, you're in for a treat. I'm not going to read all of it to you. It is quite epic. If you can't quite kind of exercise the ghosts of Monty Python, I'm sorry. There's bits of humour, but not quite like that. Okay, so in the story of the Grail, which as Malcolm Guite tells it, is basically a search for Jesus' presence and Jesus' healing in the world. So whatever you've heard about the Holy Grail legends in the past, have that in mind. This is a legend as a country was becoming Christian, exploring what it means to find Jesus' presence and healing in the world. And this bunch of knights go out in search of this cup, emblematic of Jesus' presence. But it's not just knights that go. Actually, men and women of every age are involved. There's hermits, there's queens, there's mothers, there's youngsters. There's actually kind of a fair few mythical beasts and animals involved in the quest as well. Everyone gets involved. One small detail that you need to know about being a knight is you wear armour. And if you're out on a quest wearing armour with your helmet on, and it's been a while since you saw your mate, you may not recognise them as they come. And if you're in quest mode, and the testosterone is kind of there, and you're ready for a fight, you may dehorse your friend before you've actually realised that they're your friend and not your enemy. And this is happening all the time in the story of Galahad and the Grail. It's quite a funny recurring thing. At one point, Galahad dehorses one of his friends, wounds them, and then realises it's another knight on the quest. And then he says this to them. There's a monastery nearby. They'll give you food. They'll tend your wound. They're good people. And you will be healed. And then he goes on to say, if at last your healing comes and you have taken rest, then make your way by night and day back to King Arthur's court and say, you met us here, still on the way, still faithful to the quest. You met us here, still on the way, still faithful to the quest. I wonder what your faithfulness looks like. I wonder if someone met you on the way, hopefully not knocking you off your horse before they recognized you. And got into conversation. What would your faithfulness look and sound like? Do you have a quest? My simple answer to you, my suggestion to you is yes, you do. Your life counts because you count, because God loves you. Your life has meaning because God is involved. And you are called to make a difference wherever you happen to find yourself. If we think about that Genesis passage, the core story of how it all began. And in the story, God creates several things that are very good. Land, night and day, plants, animals, and then makes people. And the people, God says, are very good. And the people are slightly different to everything else. Because it says in the story that God makes them in his own image, male and female. And then he blesses them and says, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. People are made to be in God's image, reflecting what God's like, and to carry God's rule. So they're supposed to, in the story, cultivate and tend over and look after the land. Right from our founding story, we see that we're blessed and we're given purpose, made in God's image, created to rule. But you know how the story goes on. The image is broken as people turn from God to their own ways. I think we've got a picture of a broken image. The image is shattered. And so whatever that reflection of what God's like that people carry gets fragmented into many different pieces. And the rule becomes a kind of tyranny. I wonder if you've ever heard that talk of ruling and stewarding and it's made you uncomfortable and you thought, hang on a minute, I don't want to exploit or rule or have dominion over creation. Because so much of our image of rule actually looks like tyranny. Because our image of God in ourselves is broken. That sense of ruling comes hand in hand with that sense of God's image. So it makes us think, well, what's God like? Well, God's like Jesus. Paul's going to say a bit more about Jesus and purpose next time we're together. And so what's God like in treating all of creation? Well, loving like its creator and compassionate and tender and committed to flourishing. So what might that purpose be? Well, it's about freedom and beauty and life and goodness and restoration in ourselves and through us. And so as the image gets healed, as we come closer to God, as we turn to Jesus, so the purpose becomes to be part of that restoration in big ways and little ways, wherever we happen to be. And throughout history, you see ordinary and, yes, very fallible people doing this. Abraham and Sarah are called to leave somewhere and go somewhere and told that they'll get land and family and home, and through them all people will be blessed. Moses is called to liberate an enslaved people and take them out of slavery and teach them how to live as a community of free people. Deborah, one of the judges, is called to defend and protect and mentor and coach and raise up leaders of her time. Samuel, at a similar time, is called in a temple by a voice he doesn't recognize, but learns to recognize the voice and starts to say what that voice is saying, articulate that voice to a whole nation at a time of massive transition. And Esther, in exile, forced into places and roles she would never have dreamed of and probably never wanted to be in, discovers she's called to be an agent of justice, to fight for her people. These stories of the Old Testament church, they must have brought such hope and such comfort to those who were listening as they looked at the rubble and disruption of their own lives. So they wondered how on earth to follow God in their moments of crisis and difficulty. Another of those Old Testament characters was Ezekiel. Ezekiel, when he was 30, was taken from his home in Jerusalem into exile in Babylon. Incredibly traumatic. And as part of all that transition, discovers a purpose to be a prophet as well as the priest that he was, to listen to God and to declare sometimes quite uncomfortable things to the listeners. And lots of the explanation, lots of the declaring is trying to explain how they got into the mess that they're in. But then at the heart of this is this amazing image. Ezekiel in exile, as he follows his purpose, gets a picture, a vision of a temple restored in Jerusalem. And he says to the people, one day the temple will be back and God's presence will be there. And the sign of God's presence in this vision is a little spring that wells up in the temple. And the spring flows out from the temple. And as it flows out, it gets wider and wider. And in the vision, Ezekiel follows this spring. And it gets to the point where it says, that's on the screen, it became a river that was too deep to cross, deep enough to swim in. And then the river goes on and it goes into all the dead and barren and dry places around. And as it does that, it brings life and healing and beauty to that desert place. Ezekiel, in his place of trauma and difficulties, is grasping what's God saying about all that's happening, gets a picture of God's purpose for the world, for God's people. That in a place of presence, a spring would well up that would flow into a river that would bring life and healing to the world. Because that's God's purpose. God is about bringing liberation and beauty and nurture and life and creativity and togetherness and reconciliation to all things. Everything will get renewed. When all said and done, it's all getting made new. And we are invited, like Ezekiel, to spot that river, to jump into it, and to swim. Your life has meaning, and you can make a difference where you are. Three little stories of people exploring that meaning. A family called the Harris family, Pete and Miranda Harris, when they had two young children, were waiting for a third to arrive, felt God agitating them around their love of bird life. Pete was a vicar in Liverpool in the early 80s. But they became more and more agitated that they loved birds. They were frustrated and scandalized by what was happening and that no one seemed to be doing anything about it. So they moved from Liverpool to Portugal. And they set up a sanctuary there, named after the Portuguese word for rock. And they built a community around this. And hospitality was as important to them as creation care. And so they gathered conservationists in their place and over their table talked about the environment and the crises that are faced. And how they could live differently and their faith. And out of that, the organisation Arosha was formed. Christian environmental organisation that I think has probably done more than any other to change the way evangelical Christians think about caring for the environment over the last couple of decades. Huge impact. All the if you've ever heard us talk about Eco Church and we've got our bronze and becoming silver, that's part of that story. Because they got caught up in a river. Another picture, totally different one. One of my favourite bands are called Ezra Collective. They are a jazz band, but really, really danceable, really joy-filled. Thank you, Alfred. And keep it going, that's fine. And they've become one of the biggest bands in the UK. They won Brits last year. They won the Mercury Prize. Their drummer, Femi Colioso, has a regular Friday night slot on the radio. On Good Friday, he devoted it to gospel music. They love music. They love bringing joy. But they recognise they're part of a bigger purpose. TJ and Femi Colioso still work as volunteers at their local youth club that's part of their church. And because their story involves becoming a band through a youth jazz program called Tomorrow's Warriors, they regularly advocate for young people at every possible moment. There's been some interviews with them on television recently saying, why is no one else creating space for young people and investing into them? They have a particular trick which is lovely at their bigger concerts. Not only do they talk about investing in young people, but at their big concerts, Glastonbury last year's an example, they share their stage with youth bands. So you can see in Glastonbury, Ezra Collective closing their set with the song that Alfred's playing to us, but giving the mic to a teenager and playing alongside young trumpeters, trombonists, jazz musicians. Because they say, when we were kids and our life was going in two potential different directions, someone gave us an instrument and time and said, have a go. In the river, living for purpose. You could probably fade it out now, Alfred, but maybe put it on again at the end. But you might say, well, I'm not necessarily likely to set up an environmental project, but you might. I'm not necessarily going to be in a jazz band. What can I do? I'm going to read one more story to you. This is from a booklet that LICC, London Institute for Contemporary Christianity, put together. I've got four of them here that you can take if you want to explore this more. It's called The One About, and it's just stories of real people in everyday life who live for a purpose. This story is called The Safecracker. Jane's in her mid-20s. She's one of those straight-talking people. She lives a full life with God out in the open. She works as a food and beverages manager in a big hotel. She does her job really well. She cares for her colleagues. She goes and joins in at the pub and talks unselfconsciously about whatever she's up to. Her trust in God, her obsession with coffee, her love of people watching in the park. Over time, she's acquired a reputation for fixing things, surprisingly often with prayer. There was the computer that didn't work, and they really needed it sorted. When no one else could do anything, Jane simply prayed, right there in the office. No fuss, no palaver, no big deal. God answers prayers. Ask, he tells us. So she does. knowing that he may not answer the way she wants, but that's up to him. And of course, when the computer starts to whir, God's not just showing that he answers prayer, he's helping with the work, because the work matters too. And examples abound. So there's the curious incident of the notoriously stubborn vending machine. A member of staff was sent to ask Jane to come and pray for the removal of a can of Coke that had been paid for, but that was refusing to fulfill its destiny. Jane went, tried first to coax the can out of the machine in the conventional way, buttons, shaking. The can refused to move, so Jane began to pray. She'd hardly begun before the can clunked into the delivery tray, and the gaggle of staff looking on cheered. On her final week at the hotel, the duty manager came to tell her she couldn't get into the safe. In fact, three others had attempted the combination lock, and the problem had been sent up to the general manager. They needed to get the safe open because it contained the kit they needed to do the daily computer backup. So Jane was asked to come and try. She tried the code. Nothing happened. And then one of the duty managers said, "Well, why, you might as well pray then." Ignoring the hint of mockery, Jane not only prayed, but laid hands on the safe with a room full of people. She put the code in and it clicked open. The next day was her final day at that hotel, and her successor's first day. They were doing the usual morning review meeting, which included the mandatory reading of the incident diary. All the department heads were there, around eight people in all, and since everything to do with the safe had to be recorded in the incident diary and shared at the review meeting, the words the duty manager read were, "Safe wouldn't open. Ask Jane to help." She prayed. Safe opened. No one in the meeting batted an eyelid except the new recruit, whose wide-eyed look of amazement betrayed his bewilderment. "What kind of place have I come to?" Your life counts because you count. You have purpose. God invites you to demonstrate his presence, his healing, and the great flow of his justice and mercy and goodness. One last little thought. Psalm 90 is an extended meditation, basically, on mortality. So it's a cheery one. And it has this great phrase in it: "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." One of the reasons our lives count is because they end. And at some point, our legacy will have a full stop after it. "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." What could you be doing that you might have been putting off? How might you get into that river of God's liberating, creative, loving presence more fully? The psalm goes on. "May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us." Yes, establish the work of our hands. Your life counts because you count. Whatever stage you're at, whatever transition you're facing, however high or low your capacity is, there are people around you that you are making a difference to. Because you're made in the image of a creative God, and that image is being healed. So as that image is healed, so your hands are anointed. And as your hands are anointed, so that image is healed. And you discover the quest, the journey. and you're found still out there seeking what God has for you. May the favor of the Lord rest upon us. May he establish the work of our hands. We're going to respond through communion in a moment, but I'm going to just leave a moment's pause with some questions on the screen. You don't have to talk about these with other people right now. You might like to at some point later. How's God leading you to make your life count in this season? How far does your life feel caught up in the great themes of God's story? How might you live with a bit more purpose over the next few months? We're just going to sit with